Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Hello and welcome to the Premier League All Access podcast with me, Alex Crook, the former Chelsea defender Scott Minto, and European football expert Kevin Hatchard, here to look back at a massive weekend and a potentially pivotal one as well. Here's what's coming up.
You know he's going to come at you like a boxer from minute one to the end of the 12th round.
This is a nightmare for me because obviously I don't want City to win four in a row. I don't want Liverpool to win a raffle. And if Arsenal win it, I'll have to move out.
That kind of thing happens to teams who go down.
That was the most one-sided 1-1 game I have seen for a very long time.
How poor are these group of players mentally that you can do that 1 week, score a last-minute winner against your arch rivals in the FA Cup, and then absolutely stink the place out against one of the worst teams in the division?
What we have now is a player low on confidence, low on rhythm, low on match sharpness, and everything that could go wrong is going wrong.
23 against Everton, 27 against City, 17 against Fulham, 22 against Luton, 23 against Villa, 22 against West Ham, 25 against Liverpool, and obviously 31 against Brentford.
Start with the big game of the weekend, maybe the biggest game of the season so far. It was a bit of a bore fest, in all honesty. Manchester City 0, Arsenal 0. I think both Adrian Durham and myself came away from the game thinking maybe it was an opportunity missed for Arsenal, bearing in mind that City were without John Stones, Kyle Walker, Edison, Nathan Ake went off early on. The narrative amongst Arsenal fans, Scott, seems to be that it shows how far they've come. They can go to the Etihad, grind out a 0-0 when you compare it to what happened in this fixture last season. Where do you stand?
Yeah, look, you know, I look at the players who didn't play for City, but I watched that game and City was still the dominant force. I mean, Arsenal had 28% possession. And a part of that was down to the fact that City was so good with the ball and without the ball as well, by the way. You know, Arsenal, I felt, especially in the first half, looked very nervy. But I think the bottom line is that it was the result that Arsenal wanted, and where you wanted Arsenal really to try and go for it. And I, you know, I've got no skin in the game. I was quite happy either way. It wouldn't have bothered me. I kind of was wanting City to win, but from an Arsenal point of view, I don't really care. You know, it was all about them trying to come away with a point. I think it was all about them making sure they didn't lose. If they were to win, I think that would have been a big gap between themselves and Manchester City, especially with the goal difference. And now both of them are chasing Liverpool, but now, look, the bottom line is, I think, to keep a clean sheet at the Etihad, doesn't matter who's injured, City were still very good in terms of with the ball. They just weren't great in the final third, and that's a massive point for Arsenal.
I think, Kev, we do have to pick out William Saliba in particular for special praise because he did a real job on Erling Haaland. He had a couple of half sights of goal, Haaland, but nothing clear-cut, and there aren't too many centre-backs in the world football who can take on Haaland in his own backyard and basically have him in his pocket.
Thought Saliba was outstanding, and I thought he came hot on the heels of some quite interesting comments from Didier Deschamps in the French camp, who'd suggested that Saliba's not quite the same player for France that he is for Arsenal, probably because he knows he's going to be one of the first names on the team sheet with Arsenal, and that's not the case with France. And he said there are things that he does that I don't particularly like. Well, I think Saliba maybe took that as motivation because he played pretty well against Chile, and then he was absolutely outstanding in this game. Thought Gabriel played well too. I think in general, Arsenal are one of the best out-of-possession teams in Europe. you know, Mikel Arteta has drilled them so well. They know exactly what they need to do. They reduced what many people think is the best team on the planet. And I know they were missing some key players, but the best team on the planet to barely any clear-cut chances, really. And Haaland looked quite frustrated by the end, and he missed that big chance when he completely missed the ball. And I think part of that is the fact that he just didn't have a sniff the rest of the game. So when something does happen, even the best snatch at it. So I thought it was a real plus for Arsenal, actually. I thought their approach was spot on. They made some chances, didn't take them. But I don't think you can get much better in that kind of atmosphere against that kind of opposition.
I spoke to Rico Lewis-Scott after the game. He came on early after Ake picked up an injury. He conceded to me that Liverpool are now the favourites to win the Premier League. They are, in the eyes of the bookmakers as well. Arsenal, actually, a distant third with the bookies in that particular race. I guess that comes down to the fact that if you look at City's fixtures, it isn't unfeasible. They could win every game. You've taken a close look at Liverpool's fixtures. You think they're pretty kind as well. Arsenal still have to go to Spurs for a North London derby. They've still got to go to Old Trafford, where historically they don't perform very well. So I guess the point that Adrian was making, and he did clash with Perry Groves on air about this, is that Arsenal might look back at the end of the season and see this as an opportunity missed. Had they have won the game, I think we'd be talking about City being third favourites.
Yeah, you know, do you know what? And you look at the fixtures and you sort of say, well, that's winnable. But then, you know, what we've seen with the Premier League this season, you just never know. I do think Liverpool have some winnable fixtures. You know, that Old Trafford, what kind of Manchester United are going to turn up? My goodness, the game I saw them at Brentford, you know, Liverpool should win by 3 or 4. But, you know, we know that United can lift themselves against Liverpool. You got Everton away. Spurs at home won't be easy. Villa away. But where will they be in terms of Europe? I think Liverpool, you have to say, probably are the favourites. And I get what Aid is saying, actually, because, as I say, I think they could have put almost City out of the title race. The fact that they would have been 4 points plus a lot of goal difference. So it's basically another point if they had done it. Look, whatever you say about City, and they weren't quite at it. I thought Gabriel actually was sensational against Haaland. And I think he was talking to him during the game as well in bits that we didn't see. Getting into Haaland and getting him frustrated. And as Kev just mentioned there about the miss he had, I don't think his head was in the right place, because I think actually Gabriel, more than Saliba, was on at him, was all over him like a rash, but also verbally on top of him. But City was still very good in midfield. They were still keeping the ball. I mean, they had 72% possession against Arsenal. Now, I don't think Arsenal necessarily intentionally meant to sit back. But when City are that good, it does put you under pressure. And I think in the end, they were thinking, well, just don't concede. I don't think they created enough chances. I think it's one of those where at this moment in time, you say it's a good point. But they may well look back if they lose it by a point and say, well, they should have gone for it more. I just don't think they could have done. I think as bad as City were, but as not great as they were in the final third, they still are the best team in the world at keeping the ball and putting teams under pressure.
It sounds a bit churlish when you look at the Premier League goal scoring ranks this season, but Erling Haaland hasn't been quite the same player. And if you look at Manchester City, their team, Kev, just doesn't inspire me like it did last season. I think Jeremy Doku is a downgrade on Riyad Mahrez. I don't think they've properly replaced Gundogan in midfield. I'm still not convinced by Josko Guardiola, although actually I think he had probably his best game in a City shirt this weekend.
I thought he played really well.
it's a big summer, isn't it, for City? I think they're going to go back in for Lucas Paquetá, and I think he does make a massive difference if they can get that deal over the line.
Yeah, I think with Paquetá, what you get is you get incredible quality on the ball, but you also get a bit of a tenacious tiger without the ball, because and he does need to calm that down to some extent, but you know, he'll put that work in, and that's what Guardiola demands. I agree with you to a certain extent, but I still think they have that ability to strike fear into teams. I think Haaland has just set the bar so high for himself, and he says it himself. He says, look, I can improve. There are lots of things I can do to become the striker I want to be. We know what an incredible finisher he is. We know what a goal scorer he is. He says himself, his heading could be better. His link play could be better. That's all going to come. He's got the perfect teacher in Pep Guardiola, even though sometimes with centre forwards, he hasn't always had the best reputation. But, you know, he's in the right place with great players around him. So I've got no doubts about him in the long term. For me, I still think Manchester City are the team with the form and distance, if you like. You know, they're the team that's done it time and time again. I wouldn't discount them at all. Maybe there's a bit of kidology there from Lewis, so I wouldn't put it past him as a young player, but he's got a wise head on his shoulders, I think. I think City is still very much in this and very much the team to beat.
He spoke so well, Rico Lewis, I have to say. He spoke well beyond his
years. Really smart.
He was really good, but can I just say again, just the fact that City are where they are. This is for the first time ever in the history of top flight English football that a team is going for four straight titles. You know, this is unheard of. This has never happened before. They're still going for the double treble. They're going for, what is it, six Premier League titles in 7 years. I mean, this is incredible. They're human beings. They're not robots. So just, it's almost, and I said at the start of the season, look, I'm still going to go for City just because I feel that the others were that far off. But for them still being up there and not being 5-6 points away just goes to show that, one, the manager that Pep Guardiola is, and two, the mindset that they have. Because as I say, they're going something that not even your Manchester United teams and greats and the Liverpool teams of the 80s have ever done before.
That is a low blow from you, Minto. Unbelievable. Do you know what? This is a nightmare for me because obviously I don't want City to win four in a row. I don't want Liverpool to win a raffle. And if Arsenal win it, I'll have to move out because the wife and father-in-law are just going to be unbearable. This is going to be a painful few weeks.
Can't win.
Whatever way it goes. City back in action this midweek. By the way, they're at home to Aston Villa, which could be another potentially tricky game. That'll be live on TalkSport. Let's take a look then at the league leaders. Liverpool coming from behind. They beat Brighton by 2-1 at Anfield. Even when they were losing, Kev, you must have felt fairly confident they'd come back and win, because there were times in this game when they absolutely swarmed all over Brighton.
I think from having seen the first 5 minutes after the goal went in, I was confident that Liverpool were going to turn this around because they were absolutely relentless. I mean, Mohamed Salah had 7 goal attempts in the first half hour. Luis Diaz, as he has been for the last few weeks, I thought was sensational. Every time that they missed a chance or things didn't quite go their way, they just kept going again and again and again. And as Scott, I'm sure, will know, it's really difficult as a defender to try and contain players like that, because you can never really feel comfortable. You can never really feel that you have them in your pocket because they just keep on coming at you. You look at the role of Alexis McAllister, I thought he was outstanding, maybe a little bit of extra oomph playing against his former club. And he's now the player that Liverpool thought they were getting because they're able to deploy him in the position he was always meant to play in. And that's because Wataru Endo is doing such a superb job behind him. And Liverpool, I think, can hurt you in so many different ways. I talked earlier about Arsenal being one of the best teams in Europe out of possession. Liverpool are right up at the top in terms of being in possession. You've got Nunez causing chaos through the middle, Luis Diaz, Mohamed Salah. You've got the threats from midfield as well. So I was confident Liverpool would turn it round. And in the end, it was an excellent display. The only concern, I think, is when Liverpool are away from home, they do look a bit more fragile because they're always going to give you a chance to play.
Scott, if you were a Liverpool supporter, would you be a little bit concerned about the number of times they have to come from behind to win, especially at Anfield?
Well, you certainly wouldn't want it to happen, but the Championship winning sides do that. And I don't worry for them at home, to be honest with you. I mean, looking at their games, obviously they've got Sheffield United coming up next. Even with Spurs at home, Wolves at home, and just the Klopp effect of him leaving as well. I think that the Anfields, even if they go 2-0 down, I can see them winning every single game at Anfield. The question is, can they, you know, combine Europe? Because you'd expect them to go into Atalanta, won't be easy, but can they combine Europe going deep into that competition and win almost every game from now to the end of the season? Because they might well have to do that. But I just think just that 2-point gap right now is very, very important. I really do. And do you know what? Kev's right. You're up against a winger who quite often they can be quite fragile mentally. And the first 10 minutes, if it doesn't work very well, then, you know you've got them. Okay, it didn't happen often, Crookie. I'll take that one on the chin. But with Salah, no, it absolutely is 100% of the time. You know he's going to come at you like a boxer from minute one to the end of the 12th round. And that's a horrible thing. No matter how many misses he makes, he's going to step up and take another one. And I just think, yes, they concede, but they have that mentality monster feeling again. And they have, even with Jota being out, and he'll be coming back, Trent coming back as well. They have so many options up front. Again, I agree with Kev in terms of how good they are going forward and one of the very best in Europe right now.
Scott hinted at it there, Kevin. I mentioned this on air yesterday, and this isn't me being anti-Manchester City, but I was at the Liverpool City game a few weeks ago, and the atmosphere at Anfield was very, very different to what I witnessed at the Etihad yesterday. I think it's the same at the Emirates, in fairness, where the Arsenal fans are really invested in their team. It can happen when you're used to seeing your team win every week, you become a little bit blasé and maybe the noise level drops a little bit. Could that play a part between now and the end of the season, that Anfield atmosphere compared to the Etihad?
It could certainly help. I mean, that Anfield factor is well written about, well discussed, and there's a reason for that, because it is a weapon for Liverpool. There's no doubt about it. And that's been decades in the making. And so you have this synergy between the Liverpool team and, of course, the Liverpool crowd. Now, it's different at Manchester City. There's a real hardcore at City who were with them when they were in the third tier and have been all the way through. So I would never want to denigrate them, but it is a different type of vibe. It is a little colder. Now, that's not a dig at City fans. I think it's just the truth. I think Arsenal fans have shown that you can change that. And I think Arsenal fans got a bit of stick early on from, you know, other supporters saying that what they were trying to do was a bit cringe, but actually it's proven to be a good thing. And I think now the Emirates is a more intimidating place to go. Pep Guardiola's made reference to it on numerous occasions that atmosphere at City is not quite what he wants it to be. He wants more intensity from the fans.
Liverpool back in action on Thursday, live on TalkSport. Take on Sheffield United, you'd expect that to be fairly straightforward. Next Sunday, they go to Old Trafford. If United play as badly as they did against Brentford, that will be an easy victory as well. Quick word on the managerial situation, Kev. We broke the news on TalkSport in midweek on Thursday, I think it was, that Xabi Alonso stays at Bayer Leverkusen. He confirmed that in his press conference on Friday. How big a blow is that for Liverpool? Because the impression I got all along was that if Alonso wanted this job, then he was the front runner.
It is a blow, no doubt about it. He was a prominent name on that list, as we know. And he is a rising star. You look at what he's done with Bayer Leverkusen. It's a sensational job. He's having a season for the ages. They still haven't lost in any competition. That's 39 games and counting now in competitive football this season that have gone without defeat. You look at what happened at the weekend. They were able to come from behind. They were 1-0 down against Hoffenheim for a big chunk of that game, equalised very late on, and then Patrick Schick won it in stoppage time. So they're playing like champions. He's been able to put his philosophy into that club. But I think he's a very pragmatic guy, and he would have looked at it and thought, well, I've still got work to do at Leverkusen. I've got a really good relationship with the sporting director, Simon Rolfes, really good relationship with the CEO, Fernando Caro. And he also knows that if he stays, that will encourage some of the big hitters in that Leverkusen side. Alex Grimaldo at left wing back, Florian Wirtz at number 10, who's been outstanding. It will encourage those guys to stay too. And who knows what they could do in the Champions League next season and maybe have another crack at winning the Bundesliga next season. So I can understand why he stayed. I must admit, I thought he'd be drawn in by the lure of Liverpool, having been such an identifiable figure with Liverpool fans, having played so well for the club for so long. But I can understand why he's decided to stay at Bayer Leverkusen.
On Roberto De Zerbi, Scott, who's also been linked with the job, I'm not convinced he's going to get it. And I think one of the reasons is that he's too outspoken in press conferences. I think it was really interesting that he went toe-to-toe, really, with Tony Bloom before this game, the Brighton owner, saying that he's not sure about signing a new contract. He doesn't know if Brighton's ambitions match his own. Would that put you off if you were the new Liverpool sporting director and you hear De Zerbi speaking in that tone about the guy who pays his wages and the guy, remember, who's taken Brighton from the brink of oblivion into Europe for the first time in their history? I thought it was really disrespectful from De Zerbi.
Yeah, I think if there are certain owners out there, and I don't need to mention names, where you could probably understand De Zerbi, if he were the manager of that particular club, him coming out and saying that. I just think it's not needed at best. It lacks a bit of class at worst. it's not what a Liverpool manager would do. But I do kind of understand De Zerbi to a point. You know, he's a winner. He wants to win. I heard Adrian on the radio sort of saying, I think it was 6 wins in 22, and they hadn't had back-to-back victories since September. And he wants to change that. He doesn't want those stats, and he wants a bigger and better squad. He wants to be, with the greatest respect to Brighton, with a team like Liverpool that is capable of challenging and will have the finances to compete, although Liverpool obviously don't quite have them in the way that a City does. So I get it. I like De Zerbi. I think from a football point of view, he'd do really well at a top club. I really do. But yes, that from a Liverpool hierarchy point of view, that's not what a Liverpool manager in waiting would say, really.
Yeah, Ruben Amorim being heavily linked in Portugal as well. We'll see how that develops over the course of the next few days and weeks. That Sunday's action taken care of. Let's take a look back at what was a thrilling Saturday across the TalkSport network.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Oh, what a goal! It's an absolute stunner from Harvey Barnes. His second of the game. Newcastle 4, West Ham United 3. Ridiculous.
Nottingham Forest 1, Crystal Palace 1. Chris Wood continuing his good form under Nuno.
Oh, poor old Seamus Coleman. Pickford's left it because it's going nowhere, and he just chests it into his own net. Former 2, Everton 1.
Can you believe it? Chelsea 2, 10-man Burnley 2. Dara O'Shea up from the back to head it at goal.
Sheffield United 3, Fulham 3. Rodrigo Muniz with the equaliser and an acrobatic volley.
Werner with a low cross. Son with a shot. Shot deflected and in, and the captain may just have won it for Spurs right at the end of the game.
The fight for fourth continues and Villa are right in there. Aston Villa 2, Wolverhampton Wanderers 0.
Here is Casemiro, and now Mason Mount, and Mason Mount has done it.
This is very much papering over the cracks, but at this moment in time, if you're a United fan, who cares?
Here is Tony inside the penalty area, twisting and turning towards the byline, pulls it back, and Aya is there to equalise! Christopher Aya in the 99th minute!
Oh, the Premier League, we've missed you.
Well, the start in West London, it finished Brentford 1, Manchester United 1. Would have been daylight robbery if United had won that game, but how rubbish do you have to be that you played that poorly for 98 minutes? You score what was a really well-taken goal for Mason Mount, a rare highlight for him in what's been a miserable season so far. And then you allow the opposition straight from the restart to snatch an equaliser. And all this, Kev, on the back of the euphoria of that last gasp win over Liverpool. How poor are these group of players mentally? You can do that one week, score a last-minute winner against your arch rivals in the FA Cup, and then absolutely stink the place out against one of the worst teams in the division.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, and it's something we've talked about for much of the season, that they are a team that never beats you with the system, with the structure. You look at Liverpool, even if they've got a few players who are slightly off their game, you know how they're going to play. And with that incredible work they do without the ball, they're always in with a chance of doing something. You look at Arsenal, that structure Mikel Arteta's put into play, even if a couple of their players aren't at it, you've at least got that base level. United don't have that. It's all about individual performances. Very similar in some ways to the way Bayern Munich are playing, actually, in the Bundesliga right now. If those individuals don't perform, you're in big, big trouble because you don't have a structure to fall back on, either with the ball or without the ball. And you look at the number of shots they give up, even against the weakest opposition, it is not a sustainable way to play. And you can only outrun the data for so long. And I think the new hierarchy at United are very data-driven. They will look at this and they will think, how can we legitimately carry on with Erik ten Hag with these sorts of numbers? He had an encouraging campaign last season. This season, the whole thing has unravelled.
Well, I don't think Liverpool will have to wait too long to exact revenge for that FA Cup defeat. I think it will be dished out cold on Sunday. It's interesting with Ten Hag. I wrote quite an impassioned Twitter thread in the week suggesting that maybe he deserves the opportunity to prove himself in a properly run football club where the structure above him is right, which he hasn't had for 2 years. But then you look at the data and these managerial decisions are so data-driven now. I know Liverpool are looking at numbers in terms of their next manager. If you're Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Sir Dave Brailsford and Dan Ashworth watching from afar, you'll look at the number of shots that they concede week in, week out, how dominant they allow opposing teams to be. And it's difficult to make a case just based on the data for Ten Hag staying in charge. He did come out and criticise his players, Scott, which he hasn't done a lot this season. Quite often he's defended poor performances. He said they lack passion, they lack belief. He said that Brentford wanted it more. Nobody, for me, epitomised that more than Marcus Rashford, who turned up for 10 minutes and then down tools again.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know this could be a podcast all on its own and just a rant by you all on its own. And you know what? It'd be completely justified. And do you know what? I'm like you, that I want Ten Hag to be given a chance. For far too long, managers have come and gone because of the bad player culture. But I was doing that game for TalkSport and Thomas Frank was absolutely right. If that was the most one-sided 1-1 game I have seen for a very long time. And I even going into the game made a few notes, and just what Kev was saying is absolutely spot on in terms of the amount of shots that the United had faced. 23 against Everton, 27 against City, 17 against Fulham, 22 against Luton, 23 against Villa, 22 against West Ham, 25 against Liverpool, and obviously 31 against Brentford. This is a team that's not a team. You know, this, if the owners are looking at, right, why are we going to keep this guy? Last season was last season. This season was so bad. It has been so bad that even if win the FA Cup, it will just be papering over the cracks. I don't see anything in sort of, you know, like a Spurs, what Ange has come in and done, and just completely, there's a philosophy there. You know, Mikel Arteta, there's a style there. There's a structure there. They're a team of moments. They're a team of individuals. And yes, he still hasn't got on top of Marcus Rashford in terms of trying to at least just work hard. For me, it's not necessarily about form, but it's about doing the right thing for your team. And there's a bunch of individuals, and it's unfair just to have a go at Marcus Rashford, but there's a bunch of individuals there that he's had all season and it's still not happening. And the owners are wanting to look at him and say, right, I've seen enough. We'll give him another year. I can't defend it at the moment. It was so poor, Crookie, honestly. How you guys even got away with a point, you should be embarrassed.
He's taken the Mickey, Rashford, and he should be nowhere near the United team against Liverpool next weekend. He should be nowhere near the playing for the Euros. Same can't be said of Ivan Toney. I think he picked up where he left off for England. He really imposed himself on that Manchester United defence. His touch for the goal was superb. I'd be surprised now if Gareth Southgate doesn't tell him to dig out his passport come the summer. Let's move on to Stamford Bridge. It finished Chelsea 2, 10-man Burnley 2. Simple question, Kev. Who had a worse weekend? Erik ten Hag at Brentford or Mauricio Pochettino failing to beat the 10-man of the Clarets? I mean, it was, again, a bonkers performance from Chelsea.
Yeah, I think it's a photo finish, really. And they're very similar in some ways because they lack that structure. They lack that consistency. And they're relying on individual moments. And you know, I've said on several occasions, I think the owners have got this horribly wrong. I think they came in, thought they could game the system, thought they could bring in all of these young players on long contracts, thought they could beat FFP. And they've been made to look rather foolish, because what you have now is a group of players that just cannot seem to get any kind of consistency. There's no aggression. I think Maurizio Pochettino was absolutely right to talk about aggression after this performance against Burnley. They're not physical enough. There's not that willingness to throw themselves into challenges and really go that extra mile for the club. And it's quite interesting with Pochettino. If you look at his time at Paris Saint-Germain, he had a group of players that weren't willing to do what he wanted them to do. I think he's got a group of young players here at Chelsea that can't do what he wants them to do. So they seem to be finding it really difficult to take on board what he wants. And there's just no consistency whatsoever.
They could have lost the game. Jay Rodriguez hit the bar late on for Burnley. I thought the red card was a disgrace, Scott. I'm not even sure it's a foul, let alone a second yellow. And you can understand Vincent Kompany's frustration. He ends up in the stands as well.
Crookie, it's not a foul. You know, again, I'll tell you from a fullback's point of view, you know, Mudryk's cutting across him. And so, you know, where you're meant to put your arm, and it's not even a push. His arm's just gone up there. Mudryk's gone down. And look, in real speed, because let's face it, Mudryk is quick. I can half understand the decision, but how VAR, and he's gone over there. I just wonder what the referees are thinking when they go over to the monitor. Are they actually looking at the incident, you know, sort of like in an icy cold way? Or are they thinking, well, hold on a minute, I've just had the whole of VAR sending me over here, so it must be wrong. I better make this right decision because politically, blah, 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 blah. My goodness me, that's a disgraceful decision. And you know me, I love Chelsea, but absolutely got away with that one. And for that to be a second yellow as well and to be sent off, I'm absolutely not surprised Vincent Kompany went mad. So in one way, but only a very slight way, I'm pleased for Burnley they were able to get a point out of it. But look, 33 attempts, 13 on target, and Poch saying not aggressive enough in open play and not aggressive enough in defensive set pieces. I've been very critical of the owners. I think Kev summed it up perfectly. But again, we've got to this point of the season where we're not seeing anything what Poch is known to do. His Spurs side, you know, with the youngsters, that he was able to at least get them to press really well, at least get them to try and work hard as a team. It does feel like playing for Chelsea right now and what's happened in the last 20 years, that shirt weighs very, very heavy, especially on these foreign, young foreign players, you know, coming in and they're not quite able to handle the pressure. But Poch still does need to take a little bit of the blame here. Again, as much as I like him, this, we're deep into the season now and he's complaining about they're not aggressive enough in open play. You know, this should be drilled into them that that's one of the very least things that you have to do. Compulsory. So disappointing, disgraceful decision. I don't use that word often. And in that sense, Chelsea got away with it, didn't they? Because, you know, and without Cole Palmer, what a penalty it was and what a player he is. I don't know where Chelsea would be.
We've got the battle of the has-beens. It's Chelsea against Manchester United live on TalkSport 2 on Thursday night. Unconfirmed reports that clown music will be played on the PA system throughout the 90 minutes.
Starts here with Newcastle United against West Ham United at St James's Park. Throwing inside the penalty area on this right-hand side, looking to cut onto his left, for Kudus has scored for West Ham United in stoppage time at the end of the first half.
We put ourselves in a really strong position in the game, but ultimately, you know, we unpicked it.
Throwing at the edge of the penalty area, takes the shot, scores for West Ham United. And they lead by 3-1. And it's Jarrod Bowen with his 15th Premier League goal of the season.
I thought we weren't in control. We'd gone 3-1 up and I thought that they had got control.
Oh, I've got to say, this is embarrassing defending from Newcastle United. How on earth, from your own corner, can you get caught then with Bowen just running right through?
And once a counter-attack from, I think it was a corner from our perspective, which should never happen.
Here's an opportunity for Harvey Barnes! Through the legs of Fabianski! And Newcastle United are level!
The Premier League, we've missed you.
Shot driven in! Oh, what a goal! It's an absolute stunner from Harvey Barnes, his second of the game, and that will be the winner, surely, for Newcastle United. Newcastle 4,
West Ham United 3.
An absolutely astonishing game to start the Premier League back this Easter. Ridiculous.
Just a big credit to the players and what they've given today and how well we've come back and won that game is incredible.
Incredible game at St James's Park. Newcastle 4, West Ham 3. Before we talk about David Moyes' in-game management, let's get straight, Scott, to the controversial decisions in that game. Was it a penalty for you, Calvin Phillips?
No. Again, I'm using the word disgraceful twice now in within the space of a couple of minutes. And I do feel for Calvin Phillips. It just feels like nothing's going right for him. But Anthony Gordon, very, very clever. He's come from behind and he's put his foot in between Phillips and the ball. And Phillips is about to kick the ball. That's not a foul. I just wonder sometimes where these referees are coming from and people in VAR. They don't quite understand the game. They're going purely on what the law says. But I understand, again, you know, you've got to go with the law. But that's an understanding of what's happened in a football sense. It is not a foul. Calvin Phillips has got the ball down. He's about to kick it away. And Gordon's wrapped his foot around him from behind and then gone down. I don't blame Gordon at all. But come on, officials. It was a really, really bad day for them, I think.
Yeah, and another bad day for Calvin Phillips, whether it was justified or not. He's given away the penalty. I think if you speak to West Ham fans, they will tell you that taking off Mikel Antonio when you're 3-1 up away from home and you're dominating the game and bringing on Phillips and inviting the opposition back into it, that's why they want to change come the end of the season. Actually, I was out for lunch with an agent last week and they were suggesting to me that it's pretty much a foregone conclusion. Moyes won't be at West Ham beyond the summer. So again, we'll keep tabs on that one. There was an incident after the game, Kev, footage on social media, Phillips getting a bit of stick from West Ham fans as he left the ground. He has made a hand gesture. I'm not sure that's particularly clever.
Yeah, I think you're right. You can't do that as a player, but players are all human and he's having a really, really tough time of it at the moment. Everything he's trying to do is going wrong. There's a kind of Icarus element to this in the sense that he's reached very high by going to Manchester City and chasing those trophies. And I can understand why he would be lured by that. But the risk is that you don't quite hit the level that Pep Guardiola wants. And that's absolutely what happened. He ended up not playing many games. And what we have now is a player low on confidence, low on rhythm, low on match sharpness, and everything that could go wrong is going wrong. Now, I've seen the incident with him making that gesture at West Ham fans. I don't know exactly what was said, so I guess we'd have to ask Calvin Phillips about that. You know, what did he react to? But in general, as players, you can't be doing that. You know, it's not a good look for him. It's not a good look for West Ham. So, you know, I can understand the reaction. We're all human, but I wonder if he'll reflect on it and think, yeah, I made a mistake there.
Scott, I know you at times early in your West Ham career maybe got a bit of stick from the West Ham fans. They aren't the most forgiving bunch of supporters. Were you ever tempted to give it back to them?
No. Look, I think in my 4 years there was only three people who didn't get a bit of stick at the time, and that was Palavicanio, Rio Ferdinand and Joe Cole. I think at some point we all did. You can't do that. You can't do that. And I understand the sort of human emotion and he's feeling really low right now and it's the last thing he needs, but you just cannot do that. Whenever I got stick, you just take it. You just take it. You get your head down, you get on the bus and you move on, because these are very frustrated fans that they can still argue that pay your wages. You can argue it's TV, but indirectly that's through the fans now. And you have to do that. In terms of Calvin Phillips, look, I thought it was a strange move in the first place. You know, he needed to play games. And while you can't necessarily go to a club and get guaranteed games, he almost needed to. He almost needed to leave Manchester City and say, I need you to tell me that I'm going to have six games full and I'm almost going to give you the nod. And I know it sounds wrong, but he needs to get minutes on the pitch and he needs to go through that sticky period. He was always going to do it because he hadn't played for over a year, you know, so you need at least half a dozen games to get fit and go through those mistakes. And with the midfielders that West Ham have, you know, I just felt it was a strange move in the first place. I know David Moyes really liked him from when he was at Leeds. So I really feel for him, and he's in a really dark place right now. You know, he wouldn't have wanted to, and he'd probably be regretting the fact of the hand gesture. But he ain't getting on the plane. I mean, you know, I know that Gareth Southgate has said about, well, no one can do what we're looking for, you know, what Calvin Phillips does. Well, Calvin Phillips doesn't do what Calvin Phillips can do at this moment in time. So he just needs to somehow rebuild his career, forget about England, and try and earn back the trust of the West Ham fans. Because whether they're right or whether they're wrong, you have to take the stick.
Wouldn't surprise me if Leeds go back up, if maybe they make a play for their former player, and that might just be the most sensible move for Phillips at this moment in time. Big summer ahead for him. Newcastle at home to Everton next up in midweek. No Jamal Lascelles for them. He's picked up a nasty knee injury, so our thoughts with him.
Bournemouth 2, Everton 1 in a week which could define whether Everton get another points deduction for off the field matters. On the field, they completely shot themselves in the foot. Bournemouth swung a ball in from the right-hand side to no one in particular because there wasn't a red shirt in the box. Two Everton defenders and the goalkeeper rightly left it, but unfortunately Seamus Coleman went to nudge it back to his goalkeeper off his chest. His goalkeeper wasn't there and it was a calamitous own goal. What comes this week for Everton may well define if they stay in the Premier League. On the pitch, it's now 12 without a win. Bournemouth 2, Everton 1.
On the subject of Everton, they lost it late at Bournemouth. They went down by 2-1. It's an unwanted record for Sean Dyche. 12 Premier League games without a win for the Toffees. Is he a bit fortunate, Kev, that Everton are in such disarray off the pitch? We know they don't have any money. They can't afford to make a change of manager because not many bosses survive a run like that.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And I think he would admit that it's been a really bad run of results. But we talked about Manchester United outrunning the data. The data is kind of running away from Everton in a way because their performances have been quite good for a lot of this season. And they've not won games that they should have won. And that's come back to bite them. And I think now they're in a position where they're very low on confidence. Nothing they try is working. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, of course, you know, he's on this really bad run. And it was always about, well, if he was fully fit, Everton would be fine. Well, he is fit and he isn't scoring goals. And that's a major problem. They also have a bit of bad luck going against them. How they didn't get a penalty in this game against Bournemouth, I don't know. Seemed to me that Calvert-Lewin was hacked down, should have had a penalty. And I know that this is a bit of an intangible and it's not kind of analytics driven, but you look at the own goal by Seamus Coleman, which is horrendous, which is a real shame for him because I thought he played really well for Ireland recently against Belgium and he is a top player. But that kind of thing happens to teams who go down. And, you know, it was a lack of communication, lack of cohesion, dreadful error, and it cost them the game. So you just wonder whether, having had a lot of performances where they should have got more out of them, now the confidence levels are so low that they're not going to be able to turn this season around.
Jordan Pickford, I don't think, covered himself in glory for that goal either, and obviously made a mistake for England in midweek. Is it a little bit of a worry, Scott, from a national team perspective, that Pickford doesn't really have anybody putting him under pressure in terms of that number one jersey for England? Obviously, Aaron Ramsdale isn't playing for Arsenal. Sam Johnson, I think, was going to be number two at the Euros, but he's picked up an injury that will rule him out of contention. Pickford is guaranteed to start, but does he need someone keeping him on his toes?
I completely understand the question, but I don't think he does. I think he's the character that, whether he's got competition or whether he hasn't, he's going to be really up for this and mentally strong as well. And look, you know, you talk about that mistake and it was a big mistake for England, but that was the first mistake that he's made in an England shirt, isn't it? And he's won a lot of caps now and played in major tournaments and gone deep with Gareth Southgate. On that one as well, you know, you can say maybe a lack of communication, but I still think Seamus Coleman, and again, I will say a fantastic servant, great professional for club and country, you know, a top Premier League player. He's got to deal with that. He's got to expect what happens. You know, again, you're a fullback at the far post. It's bounced up. It's just sod's law that it's come off his chest so much and straight into the goal. So I think it's slightly unfair to have a go at Pickford for that one. No, I think he's someone who, while I don't see him as world-class, I don't worry about England in goal. I really don't, as long as he's fit. Now, if he's not fit, then I might start to worry because of what you just said, the injuries and others not playing.
We should praise Bournemouth at this stage. They're pretty much safe in the Premier League now. Big decision last summer replacing Gary O'Neill. I think they will say Iriola has justified his selection. And 16 Premier League goals for Dominic Solanke, who maybe it is a touch unfortunate he's not had a chance to stake a claim in an England shirt for a place at the Euros.
Easter weekend is always such a defining period of the season, and Luton's first visit to Tottenham since the early 90s has huge ramifications at both ends of the Premier League table. Ross Barkley inside the penalty area, chance for Chong, and Luton Town score, Tahit Chong, inside 3 minutes. What a counter-attack from the Hatters. Here's Son for Spurs, rounds the goalkeeper Kaminski, and he's hit both posts. How on earth did that stay out? Werner with a follow-up, blocked by Kabore, and then Saar's shot cleared on the line by Mengi. Tottenham pile forward looking for an equaliser. Johnson to the far post. It looks like it's an own goal. Werner was lurking, but Kabore kicks the post in frustration. Tottenham score early in the second half, but they've had a huge helping hand from Issa Kabore. Lo Celso, who's got the wrong side. Oh, what an opportunity. Did that cross the line from Johnson? No sign that the referee's watches are flickering. And somehow, Brennan Johnson has failed to score from 4 yards out. Werner with a low cross. Son with a shot, deflected. And in! And the captain may just have won it for Spurs right at the end of the game. It's yet another late, late show in North London. How big a goal is that in terms of the race for the Champions League and to stay in the top flight? It is Tottenham 2, Luton Town 1.
Let's finish with a game I was at on Saturday. Tottenham 2, Luton 1. Once again, Spurs conceded early. Once again, they came back to win in the second half. And praise, I guess, Kev, for Ange Postecoglou. He brings on Brennan Johnson, has a hand in both Tottenham goals. They've scored 15 goals now in the first quarter of an hour after half-time. That isn't a coincidence, is it?
Yeah, it speaks to his ability to change the dynamic, to be able to have good in-game management. And it also speaks to the depth of his squad, because he has lots of different attacking options. Timo Werner, I think, had another good game. It was his positioning that led to the own goal. I know he had that awful finish with his left foot that he bobbled wide of the target. That's just something that comes with the territory with Timo Werner. But he was also involved in the move that led to the winning goal. Brennan Johnson was excellent coming on as a substitute. I think he's a really exciting player for club and country. I think he's going to be a massive player for Wales going forward as they try to qualify for Euros and World Cups. I think he's going to be a big part of that. Scores goals, makes goals, has got pace. So, you know, Tottenham have lots of different ways they can hurt you, lots of different ways they can change the game. But at some stage, Postecoglou is going to have to fix these slow starts, because certainly against the big hitters, you're going to suffer eventually. So if he can fix that, they're a formidable team going forward.
And not for the first time. It was the captain, Son, who had the final say. 160 goals now in a Tottenham shirt for the South Korean. He moves ahead of Cliff Jones up to fifth outright in terms of the club's leading all-time goal scorers. He's such a humble hero as well. Quick word on Luton, Scott. Hard not to feel sorry for Rob Edwards. I spoke to him before the game. He said, we've got 10 players out. I've basically got to pick everybody who's fit. They recalled Onya Dimna from Rotherham early in the season. He came on as they were trying to hold out for a point. They lost Chong to injury. Doughty hobbled off. Burke couldn't come out after half-time. And they've got Arsenal in midweek. It's really difficult for Luton. And they played well. They played with heart. They played with endeavour. Once again, they've conceded late, and it's now 10 games without a win.
Yeah, and didn't they have one of their coaches, because they were so lacking in numbers in training? And then he went off with a hamstring as well in training. You've got a feel for Robert. You really have. I mean, he can't do much more than what he's doing. And as I say, the fact that out of the three teams that were promoted, they're the team looking most likely to stay up is just a feat in itself. But they can't keep on doing it with the amount of injuries they've got. look, we don't yet know about Everton. I mean, you can tell us about what the latest is with Everton and the points deduction. If it is, let's say, a four-point deduction, then they will drop into the relegation zone and then they're right bang in it. I still feel that Luton, as much as they do score goals, they concede, and you cannot keep on doing that late on, and you cannot go out with a small squad anyway, with half of it injured. So I still worry for them, and I don't know what score it's going to be against Arsenal, but I can see them scoring three or four.
Yeah, you'd imagine it will be a comfortable night for the Gunners. A reminder, that's one of 10 Premier League games this midweek, all of them live and exclusive on the TalkSport network. Take a look at the TalkSport app for details as to how you can keep abreast of them all. Thanks to Scott and Kev for joining us. We will be back on Friday reviewing all the big midweek action and looking ahead to another bumper weekend in the Premier League.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.